Welcome to the Scaling Freelance Podcast, where successful freelancers, consultants, and solopreneurs tell us exactly how they started working for themselves and started to live a life on their own terms. Each episode features real stories packed with real salary numbers, business tactics, and lifestyle hacks that will inspire you to get serious about the business side of freelancing.
So my best month was May 2018. I probably brought in like close to $20,000.
$15,000, usually around $10,000 a month.
I think I did like $20,000 worth of photography gigs, which was extraordinary.
Come hang out with me and other growth-minded freelancers at scalingfreelance.com. I'm your host, Sean Crow, and here's today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Our guest today is Josiah Mori. Josiah is I think, former iOS developer, maybe you still do some, consultant and bass player that helps e-commerce store owners convert more visitors into sales with his company, Kickin' Back Productions. Josiah, are you ready to talk about scaling freelance?
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks for having me, Sean.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for being on. Start off with the basics here. Give us the pitch of your company and what you do.
Yeah, so I work with e-commerce companies. Recently, I've been focusing more on brick and mortar companies and helping them dive into the e-commerce space. I have been working in e-commerce, specifically on the Shopify platform for the last 2 years. Helped multiple clients scale up to about 5x their conversion rates. I am a developer by skill set. And so that's, I guess, a little bit of what I do.
So yeah, so that your team structure, just you, your solo freelancer here?
Yeah, every once in a while I brought on a subcontractor. Most of the time I found it easier to just offload business administration stuff rather than actually anything client related.
Yeah, got it. So when you say e-commerce conversion rates, are you driving more traffic to sites with like AdWords, or are you simply focusing on a site that has users and visitors and you are converting them at a higher rate?
That's a good question. So I've actually done both. With the brick and mortar companies that I'm working with right now, we're focusing on kind of both sides, but a lot of what I'm helping them do is that driving more traffic to sites. Where I feel my real expertise and wheelhouse actually lies is the site, the website, the store, front to back kind of user experience. That's actually where what I love, and figuring out how to get a customer from either the landing pages that we're driving traffic to, or home, you know, whatever home is, out to checkout, is kind of, and looking at that experience along the way of like, how are they ordering? How are they, you know, what business initiatives are we highlighting along the way to encourage those purchases and things like that? Those are actually what I love working on and thinking through and helping clients through. It just varies depending on what they need.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're doing a lot of front end stuff and like button placement, copy changes, that type of thing.
Yeah. Copy changes, button placement. We've done a lot of, I guess you could call it just widget building. I have a client that I worked with about a year ago where they were doing, they had a big social good component to what they did, and they wanted to highlight what they were giving back. They were giving back a portion of their sales to a nonprofit, and finding a way to successfully and non-intrusively still call attention to a feature and to how much of a customer's order was going towards that and how they could give more essentially was really valuable. And we saw that increase, increasing conversions by like 200%.
So. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's been really cool to be a part of some things that have really created some real huge business like related goals or milestones for different clients.
Yeah, that's really cool. Why don't you take us back to before you became a full-time consultant, full-time freelancer?
Galaxy,
yeah, what were you doing?
Far, far away. No. So about 15 years ago now, I went to school for music, was a bass player, am a bass player, I guess still, was doing that full time. And I did that for 10 years. I did that all through college and then after college as well. after college, basically full-time musician, touring professionally, et cetera, et cetera. At around the 10-year mark, roughly, I met the girl who is now my wife and really quickly realized that touring when you want to be in one specific place is not ideal. And I could not look at the music industry and guarantee that I would be able, that there was never in a time where I would be able to stop touring. Mm-hmm. And while there are opportunities out there that work for friends of mine and stuff like that, that where it's really family friendly situation, or there are about 10 or so jobs in, you know, I'm in LA, so around the LA area that kind of keep you here, that can really be consistent, pay the bills, you know, a lot of the TV stuff and things like that. The problem is that all of those are very fluky. It was hard for me to be like, yeah, I think that after touring for 15 years, I could even guarantee myself getting onto one of those, even at that point. And so I was just like, the thing I loved about music was playing, was actually being either on a stage or in a recording studio making music, playing my instrument. And I couldn't, and for me, I didn't care enough about it to teach. I didn't care enough about it to necessarily, my degree was in audio recording and arranging. I interned in the studio. I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. Like anything that was not playing, I was like, yeah, this is fine, but I can take or leave it. And at the point that I was like, I can take it or leave it, I was like, you know, I can probably go do something else. I like, music is not the only thing I think I can be good at.
So how do we get from bass player to e-commerce conversion specialist?
So I basically quit music mostly and taught myself to program.
Sweet.
And started off teaching myself JavaScript, then taught myself, let's see, well, JavaScript, Ruby on Rails, Node, you know, and then went to Swift for a little bit. I kind of just did this dance through different languages and things like that. At the time, I was working for an app development, kind of one of the DIY, like do-it-yourself, like wrapper app companies. And I helped with a lot of their developers / support. And I did that for a while, but it became clear that I was developing skills faster than I could actually, like, then were being valued at the company. And so I decided it was time to go out on my own, got a couple clients, and kind of have been going ever since. So that was about 2 years ago that I did that.
Were your first clients development jobs, I'm assuming?
Yes. One of the first clients was e-commerce. And I kind of used that as I was doing development stuff for them, but I was seeing all these other business related pieces and kind of just bringing them up to them as I'd see them. And kind of realized that I had a passion for the user experience along the way. I knew I had it because that was what was interesting to me.
Yeah. So when you were at this full-time job, can you talk about that transition period of being in the job and then convincing yourself that it's worth it to put your 2 weeks in and quit and then do this on your own? Because that's a big mental leap.
Yeah. So it was a big mental leap. It's an even bigger mental leap when you have a wife that is counting on part of your, like, we're counting on each other's income, right? Like
100%.
Neither one of our incomes could carry us at the time. And so it was figuring that out. Okay, here are the numbers. Here's exactly what I need to hit. Basically picked up enough work to get to half that point. And then we had a conversation. I said, look, I don't think I can get more than this without actually stopping. There's just not enough time in the day to do this work for this client that I have, do the work and get more. And so it was this combination of trying to get close enough to the goal, but then also saying like, we got to take a risk at some point. Will you be willing to do that with me? And I will say, you know, working as a musician for 10 years, like that was freelance essentially. And so I knew the hustle side of it. I knew the, like, how to go up and drum up things. Like, a lot, there was a lot of overlap from that. And so it was definitely, it's definitely kind of in my blood, if you will.
I can totally, for sure. So you said you drummed up some business to get to half your goal, right? And until you pretty much just didn't have any more time in the day.
Right.
How did you what did drumming at business look like for you? Like, what tactically, what did you do?
Yeah, so a lot of it was relationship building slash, you know, taking advantage of those relationships, if you will. Like, going and just talking to people, making sure to connect with people and talk about what I'm doing and kind of what I'm looking for, and how I'm helping the people that I already am in the skills that I have, essentially. So it's kind of just one, being real with people and just talking about life, you know, not necessarily looking to meet with people for a purpose, like not looking to, I didn't go into every meeting with an agenda necessarily.
Yeah. You weren't pitching right when you see
exactly. Exactly. Like, this was, let's go hang out. These are people that either were friends of mine or friends of friends that I was connected to. Let's go hang out, get coffee and connect. Through those conversations, more work kind of came up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then later on, it's been more active on like Facebook and kind of places where my clients tend to hang out. So either Facebook, several different like business type, you know, groups like Meetup and stuff like that, as well as just referrals, obviously.
Yep. So you quit your job, and what'd you do? How'd you get more business? So you drummed up half your goal. So
it was a continuation of meetings and stuff like that. Like, you know, that was the thing, is being able to like meetings. The one thing I will say is that meetings take a lot of time. And so it's not ideal, but when you're looking to get something out of nothing, essentially, like to just get more business from anything, like the only way, the fastest way I think you can get there is to just talk to people about it.
Yeah. And when you say people, do you just mean you went to a networking event, you were having a drink next to somebody and you just start talking? Is that people?
No. That's a good question. No, I specifically would talk to friends that I knew, kind of knew a variety of people, potentially maybe new people that I was exactly looking for.
Connectors.
Connectors tend to have a lot of those conversations. I'm involved with the church, and so actually a couple different churches, both from just my personal beliefs and then also my background in music. So connecting with all those people in those different ways, and just other people that you know tend to be natural networkers. I don't necessarily consider myself a natural networker. I feel like it's a learned skill that I've had to grow and develop. I'm an introvert by, like, you know, nature. But the minute that I decided to become a freelance musician, like, that had to go out the window. Like, you better learn how to market yourself and just talk to people naturally. And so figuring out who those people are who are really gifted at it and who like to talk to people, who like to remember, who can dig into what other people do naturally, because I feel like that's not something I'm great at, of like, go to a party and just be able to talk to everyone and find out exactly what they're doing and what's interesting to them and stuff like that. Yep. And remember it all. And like, that's like a crazy skill to me. I can do that with like five people at a big
group. Yeah, I'm the same way. And what's worked for me is I literally do that. I say, all right, three people, that's my goal tonight, you know?
And that's exactly what I have to do. But then you end up finding those people who are really, really good at that. And connecting with them, I found they're the ones that can oftentimes make 10 recommendations at once and be like, oh yeah, like I have this friend that, you know, I talked to this guy a couple of weeks ago, and oh, there's that guy over there. Like, they're interested in anything, and those are gold. Yeah. And so kind of trying to just connect with people in general, but also connect specific people. I have found unfortunately, very little benefit from the, like, you know, the Chamber of Commerce groups and stuff like that. Like, it just has not been the right target market. Maybe if I was in a different business, maybe if I was, I don't know. I feel like I hear about those things working for some people, and I've just struggled with them. For me, also focusing, once I started focusing specifically on e-commerce, being involved with things that are Shopify focused or very e-commerce focused, have worked, like different meetups and things like that. That's worked. So, but the like broad, like Chamber of Commerce things, like, it just, they haven't panned out. They've been just too broad with, not to be like elitist, but too few technical people. to where they don't know what I do, so they can't recommend me to anyone easily either. And so it's just I've tried those and just have not got the benefit, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. So how long did it take you then to get to that number that you were trying to hit?
It took me 2 clients to get to that number. Okay. And then to keep that number.
Is that a month, 2 months, 3 months, a year?
2 clients a month, depending on what projects and stuff like that are going on, how many things they have going, et cetera.
Okay. And about how many clients a month do you handle now?
Still generally between, I would say, 2 and 4. I try to keep them. I mean, they're pretty high touch right now. And so it's still, again, it's just me. So interact with them is important, and being able to have the time to spend is important. And so getting more than that would just be a little crazy.
Yeah, for sure. What made you decide to niche down into a specific e-commerce Shopify, right? Because it's not necessarily the natural thing a developer would do, right? It's like, oh, I'm an iOS developer, I'm a Node developer, I'm just going to look for Node jobs or iOS jobs, not I'm going to be an e-commerce conversion specialist.
Yeah, so a great question. So just like I went through courses on how to learn how to develop, I found somehow, like, I guess it's more common in the developer space. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts and stuff like that. And through that, you'd hear different guys that were e-commerce, that were consultants and teaching people how to be consultants. Some of these guys would be Jonathan Stark, Philip Morgan, another guy by the name of Matthew Inglot. Those are probably the big three. There are many out there, and there are many that I've heard. But those are probably the big three that I've kind of stayed listening to over time. Brandon Dunn would be another one.
Yep.
But yeah, I would hear these guys talk about freelancing. I would compare it to what I knew from a music freelancer standpoint. And when it came down to freelancing as a developer, I felt like it was important to really pay attention to some of those techniques and to think about and to utilize some of the things that they taught me. As a bass player, I was very much a generalist. I felt, and because it was true, I could go play any type of music and I could play it really well. And I felt like that was fun, whether, you know, some nights I was playing country music, some nights I was playing, prog rock, some nights I was playing, pop music. Like, it just, I could do those back to back to back. Finding clients doing that is really challenging. And what ended up happening as a bass player is I ended up actually playing a lot in the LA country music scene. Like, that was where I developed a community. Like, I just happened to get some of those gigs and it kind of just snowballed. And so hearing guys like Philip and Jonathan Stark talk about how that worked and why niching down was important, I realized the importance of it, because I had seen what non-niching down does, and how it's just so, then you're just like, well, I can serve the world. And it's like, well, the world is nobody.
Yep.
Like, I'm not, Jonathan Stark calls it, I'm not creating a Rolodex moment type thing, right? Where you think of who can I send to you that you can serve. Not only that, but I went through some courses and things like that I feel like helped me figure out kind of who I wanted to serve and stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's totally true, because if you say I'm a developer, like, the whole point of you niching into something is so that referral can happen. Right. So
right,
so somebody has to be able to say, oh yeah, Josiah does this, 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 and this. I've got, would you want to talk to him? Versus, oh yeah, he's a developer, I don't know if this makes sense to introduce you, versus he's an e-commerce developer, this is perfect, you know?
Yeah, and even just that thing of, like, I mean, as, you know, if you're a developer, you know this feeling of what most people hear is, oh, you're a techie. And so the next thing I know is that, like, I could easily get recommended to, like, so-and-so has a virus, like, can you go help them? I'm like, no, I don't want those. Like, you know, and to a lesser extent of that, like, getting sent to someone whose stack is, you know, Java versus like a front end web development, you know, thing, or an Android app, or even web development languages, right? Like, you know, PHP versus Ruby. Like, even though I could go and pick those things up, that's not like one is my bag versus over the other. And the likelihood of someone who needs one versus the other, like the client knows what they need, generally mm-hmm. speaking. They generally know at least some of their stack and what they're looking for. But how does that come up naturally? It doesn't. So at least trying to help people recommend me to things that are at least a closer fit.
Yep, definitely. One thing, just to change gears here a little bit, one thing that keeps coming up in my conversation with freelancers, at least at the, in the beginning stage, is do I incorporate as a business like you did, or do I stay a sole mm-hmm. proprietor? Why'd you decide to name mm-hmm. your brand?
Because Josiah Mori is a bass player.
awesome, yep.
And I was fighting that consistently. I actually forgot that was part of the deal. Is I was constantly fighting that. The other thing is I talked to a couple accountants and felt like the best way to kind of move forward was to actually set myself up as an LLC, and kind of taxes being what they are in California, kind of do this specific legal dance to at least alleviate some of the things. And again, that came from really struggling as a you essentially DBA, you know, from the music industry.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's a rebrand. I mean, so that makes total sense. Yeah. Cool. So thinking forward here, where do you want your business to be? What are you trying to get your business to act as? Are you trying to get agency? Are you trying to just be you, but more revenue? Give us a sense of that.
Sure. Yeah. My goal is to live a lifestyle that I want. And I want that lifestyle to be something that I'm doing what I love, but is also is able to be free when I need it to be. I'm actually very, as a person, I generally am very routined, but I like the flexibility of, you know, 2 weeks ago, my wife and I took a trip to New Hampshire. Like we've been on vacation for a total of like 3 to 4 weeks throughout the year, and being able to just take off randomly on a morning, like those things are important to me. Just having that control, even though I am extremely routine, having that control over life and where time is spent is really important to me. And so that combined with paying the bills, like those are the two things, right? And then since I've kind of gotten both those things, it's about creating stable revenue.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want more money? But at the same time, I try to be very careful to keep that goal of freedom on my mind, rather than getting to a point where there's so much going on that I'm just tied to a computer all the time. Like essentially at that point, I've lost what I was really going for. Even if I'm making, you know, all the money in the world.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's definitely important to know those things about yourself, you know, because it's so easy to just forget. And then all of a sudden you have 5 people working for you and you're just like, I have to be on the computer all day.
Yeah. No, it really is. And I think some of those courses that I mentioned about learning how to be a better freelancer /consultant started off with, what is that mindset? What is that thing that's driving you? And mm-hmm. I had never really thought about it before then. But now it's like, this is my goal. This is like, I try to keep that forefront.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's dive into the final freelancer fave 5 questions here. I ask every guest. Number one, in terms of revenue, what's been your best month you've ever had?
Best month was a month of about 8K or so. And that's a good month. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Number two, what is a favorite book or two that's affected the way you run your business?
Yeah, so I think that this is going to be maybe a little bit interesting, but there mm-hmm. are two books.
Why does everybody caveat their book answer? I say that and everyone's like, I don't know if this is right, but...
Sorry, it's not that everyone... It's not that right or wrong, but... and I'm blanking on the second title. The first one is definitely by Stephen Pressfield. And it's The War of Art. Mm-hmm. And that concept of resistance is huge. Like that concept of having, like, constantly fighting a battle to be creative and to get things done is just, has always resonated with me. And the other is one of his other books called, I'm blanking on the name. I'll have to get it back to you. It's essentially talking about copywriting, and he goes through, no one wants to read your shit is I think the name of it.
Sweet. Yeah. I've never heard of that. That looks awesome.
It's great. It was pretty game changing. And I feel like I'm not like, I still am learning. Like I can go back and read it and be like, wow. Okay. But it blew my mind. Both of those books blew my mind.
Yeah. That's the cool about books and podcasts is depending on where you're at in life and business, you can reread the same thing and hear something different.
Oh, totally. Totally.
All right. Number three, what are some of your favorite software tools that you pay for that you use to grow your business?
One of the biggest ones that I have paid for a while has been, I generally try and stick to a lot of free tools because there are a lot of ones out there. And a lot of times I've gone with paid ones and then just been like, this isn't actually doing what I need it to. However, Calendly has been constantly invaluable because, that is one I pay for to have multiple types of calendars is really what it comes down to. And different mm-hmm. schedules based off of those calendars and things. The other one that I've paid for a long time, and probably am going to stop with a recent change, but is Todoist. Having a really good to-do mm-hmm. app that is able to be on my phone and on my computer and be able to just be accessible everywhere was really important. But frankly, the new iOS 13 reminders seem to be able to kind of handle everything that it was doing. But up until the changes, it frankly, like nothing did everything I wanted, and yeah. Todoist was the one.
Yep.
And then the last one has to be LastPass. Just having, you know, I'm a huge proponent of crazy passwords, and you know, there would be no way for me to remember the things that get put in there, and just being able to offload things off my brain is something I learned a long time ago. Trying to keep everything in your brain, like things eventually get dropped, so I try to offload as many things as possible, whether that be to Trello boards, whether mm-hmm. that be to you know, reminders or to-do apps or whatever have you, whether that be to whether that be passwords, like trying to get as much out of my brain for other things to be there.
For sure.
More important things.
Yep. All right. Number four, what freelancer or other business owners are you currently following?
Yeah. So I probably mentioned the two that I have followed for the longest and just constantly tend to follow. And one's Philip Morgan, who is kind of a specialization guru. A lot of things that I've learned about specialization have come from him, even to the points where I've actually like hired him to be a sounding board and stuff like that. Just nice. Have someone else like talk through some business things or things that I'm trying, et cetera. And Jonathan Stark would be the other one whose, you know, hourly billing is nuts. Both of those have been incredibly, incredibly valuable over time. And they both touch in different, like they both touch other people who do different things as well. But it's generally the core of those two that I followed for a long time and continue to. And when other people fall off, they're the ones that seem to stay around. I'm still interested in it. Yeah.
Cool. Number five, if you could tell your younger self one thing, what would that be?
Yeah, I thought about this question for a little bit. I'm glad I got it in advance because I hemmed and hawed on what that was. I'm a big proponent of kind of no ifs, like just looking forward. We are where we are, and how do we make the most of where we are today going forward? But the one thing I do think I have tried to change about myself, if you will, is after leaving music, there came this moment of like, I can do anything. Like, I feel like I can do anything, but I don't know what that is. And I was starting, in a lot of ways, I was starting a new skill from zero. I could never have predicted that change. It was a very like shocking career change for me because forever, all I knew what I wanted to do. I knew music was what I wanted to do. And then all of a sudden it was like, it was not what I wanted to do. But that said, knowing that I had been interested in computers, in tech before, I wish that I had at least began teaching myself more programming before that. And I think that being open and being open to learning and being more cognizant of where you are right now may not be where you are next year, may not be where you are 5 years. And so to keep focusing on different things, to keep kind of dipping your hand into just different hats, even if it's only a little bit, you never know where your next client may be, where your next interest may be, and kind of where that might take your business. And that's been something that I've tried to, I guess, adapt from when I was younger and just kind of got more complacent and things like that.
Yeah, great. Where can listeners go to find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, so my business's website is kickingbackproductions.com with an H and not a C. the easiest way is to go to LinkedIn. That's where I tend to kind of look business-wise the most. But my website is there, and then LinkedIn as far as like activity and stuff like that. So
great. Well, Josiah, this was a great conversation. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me again, Sean. Much appreciated.